Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, good evening. This is John Hominuk with New York Metro Weather. Proud and happy to be a part of this show here this evening, and ready to get Doug Simonian on here as well. Going to be interesting, and we're very excited to discuss a winter storm. You know, it's funny, we have been doing these shows kind of sporadically. I guess the fall, we talked about our winter forecast back in the fall and kind of went through a couple of storm threats, and we love doing these things. And the great part about it, I think, with 33 and Rain and New York Metro Weather all together is the ability to kind of bring the community together, discuss the storm itself, and, you know, open up the discussion a little bit more. I think a lot of times in the meteorology field, there's a little bit of a lack of discussion points, and people don't really have the ability to ask questions. We are excited about the opportunity tonight. It's going to be myself and Doug Simonian is going to join me. This is John Hominuk, by the way, with New York Metro Weather, in case you're just joining in. So, obviously, we do have the storm threat coming up here over the next several hours. Really, we expect the storm to begin to develop and then pick up really on Wednesday morning into Wednesday afternoon across the large majority of the Northeast. As a little discussion point beforehand, we just want to let everyone know that we are going to be discussing the entire, you know, Northeast. We don't really want to discriminate in terms of location and just discuss one specific spot. And I think it's important we discuss places like Southeast Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York City, up into New England. There's plenty of people from all around. And I think it's going to be very interesting to discuss and very good to discuss all different locations so that we can kind of spread the love and discuss as many things as possible as we go along here. So in addition to that, we will also be looking at the newest weather models that come in here over the hour of time block that we have. Most likely going to be centered around the evening NAM run, which should begin, time is it, 8:30, I guess, pretty soon. And we'll kind of break that down as it comes out. And so let's kind of get started a little bit in terms of the synoptic background as to what really is going on with the storm system. And if you guys are interested in following along, I'm really just going to be using Tropical Tidbits 500 millibar height and vorticity here just to get into things initially and kind of describe what's going on, where we are, and where we're headed. So it's a very complex evolution on the storm system. We're going to pull up 500 millibars and look at the North America view on Tropical Tidbits so we can take a look at the whole piece of what's actually happening. And you'll notice right away the big standout feature on the North America view is the upper-level low that kind of extends from southern Canada all the way down to the Tennessee Valley. And that's a really big feature, and there are multiple pieces of it. There's a lobe over in southern Canada there, and then there's another one all the way down in the Tennessee Valley going to shift towards the Ohio Valley over the next couple hours here. But most importantly, there is a large blocking ridge that's situated really over eastern Canada. It has shifted down from Greenland where it was last week, and that is a very important feature in this weather pattern as those ridges act to slow down the flow in the atmosphere. And so with the ridge over southeast Canada and trough building into the Ohio Valley and moving to the northeast, and additional energy kind of joining along over the next several hours into Wednesday, we're looking at the potential for a significant storm system as the pendulum swings and the energy amplifies up the East Coast with a low-pressure system expected to form off the Delmarva, possibly along the Delmarva coast. We'll get into a little bit that more of that as we move along here. And that's where things really go awry in terms of forecast details, because even with the storm occurring just in a couple hours, there are still some pretty significant shifts occurring on forecast models in regards to not only where the surface low is going to track exactly as it develops off the coast of Ocean City, Maryland, and then up towards New Jersey and Long Island, but where the precipitation shield is going to be, where the banding is going to be in regards to the heavy snow that develops as a result of the storm itself. So that's the breakdown of what exactly is happening, and we're looking forward to bringing Doug in here momentarily. We're trying to get him on board. I'm not sure if he's online yet. He should be here momentarily, and what we're going to do is kind of break down the synoptics a little bit more in terms of how the storm system is forming, and then as the NAM starts to come out, which will be shortly, as we mentioned, we'll be able to break it down kind of piece by piece. So, Doug, are you online yet? I'm not sure. I don't think that he's joined on. Let's see. I don't think he's on yet. So we're going to wait to get Doug on here. He should be calling in any minute now. And what we're going to do kind of is break down the model runs from the 18Z suite. If there's anyone listening that is kind of a little bit more of in the learning phase of meteorology and there's any questions that you might have, we suggest going to 33rain.com to sign up, create a profile. And there's a great community of people there that love talking about the weather. And so what we'll do is do our best to answer the questions you might have, even if they're as simple as, you know, why is there going to be more snow in location A than location B? Because the whole point of this is not just to discuss weather amongst ourselves, but to try to, you know, open it up to other people who might have questions or are looking to learn to expand their meteorology knowledge as they go. So that's kind of the point of the whole thing. I think we have Doug online now. Doug, are you there? Can you hear me? And we'll see if we can hear you as well.
Yes, I can hear you. And
perfect. Fantastic. Well, everyone is, of course, happy to have you aboard. I think we have finally a good connection, and we're able to get the ball rolling. The only thing that you really missed was me just breaking down the storm kind of, in terms of synoptics and the details of all that. But, man, it's been a long couple of days, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sleep-deprived from
that's
back in
the life of a meteorologist.
The Euro's coming out, and then, you know, the Euro ends, and then it's already close to 2 a.m., which means a 60-run start. So then you kind of slowly get to bed, and then you're like, 2:15, 2:30, the NAM's coming out soon. And then before you know it, it's 2 a.m., and you haven't gotten any sleep.
Well,
it's
true because, you know, and as a meteorologist, I think one of the most important things is you want to be able to see all this data, and then you have to gather it all and figure out how to weight it. Because, and when we talk about this all the time in our discussions, you know, weather models, a lot of times it's difficult to remember, but they're really, really meant for guidance. You know, our job is to understand the
right
weather pattern that's happening and kind of use the weather models as supplementary guidance. And I think people get really caught up in snow maps and, you know, oh, it looks this way compared to the last run. You kind of lose sight of the fact that when you dive that deep into it, you lose sight of the fact that it's really just a simulation, you know, and it's
right
up to us to understand what's really happening. And I think that's what gets lost a lot of times amongst the pretty colors and the pretty maps and things like that. So I mean, with that said, I gave a little bit of a synoptic briefing, but I figured I'd open it up for you for a minute or two. Just, you know, just your general overview for people that are listening. You know, what is happening here with the storm system and why is it occurring?
Well, I mean, the signal that we've been looking at for a while regarding, you know, the threat for these large storm systems along the East Coast is the start of the formation of the blocking pattern, what we call the negative NAO. For the last nor'easter a few days ago, that blocking pattern was near Greenland, which is often a good place for a blocking pattern if you want a snowstorm. However, the initial air mass is pretty warm, and there was a trough out west, which really tainted the air mass across the immediate New York City area. But now that same blocking pattern has moved further south into southeast Canada. And what that's done is it's kind of led to a little bit of an omega shape to the pattern where on the southeast side of that ridging in southeast Canada, you still have the large upper-level low that was in place during the nor'easter and also had a little bit of additional energy phasing with it. And then on the western side of that blocking ridge, you have two large pieces of energy in the middle of the atmosphere. We have this little polar vortex low in southeast Canada, just north of the Great Lakes. And then the main mid-level disturbance currently situated, about, you know, southwest of Chicago. And the polar vortex load is going to, quote-unquote, phase with that load that's currently in Illinois, and that phase is forced to occur because the blocking is kind of pushing it south. And then there's going to be energy running out ahead of that phasing, and it's all going to be an interplay between that phased energy and how it, quote-unquote, swings the lead energy like a pendulum towards the coast, which will really determine the main storm track. And then there's going to try to be some resistance northward from that blocking and that upper-level low as well. So it's really a fun interplay, as the phasing is going to want to slingshot King and the upper level low, and the Atlantic is going to try to push it east. So it's going to be a battle between the low pressure churning northward along the Jersey coast to occluding and then going eastward. And when exactly that eastward turn occurs, you know, the earlier that eastward turn occurs, colder and snowier the scenario would be, but then the later that occurs, the more likely the New York City area would get into a dry slot, maybe even a little bit of rain and sleet, and thus lower snowfall totals.
I think that's very well said. That's kind of the key of it, right? Is how does this storm come up the coast? Because when you get into the synoptics of it, it is very much like a pendulum. I think we kind of touched on that a couple days ago. But how does the storm come up the coast? And there's multiple ways for this to happen too. I think there's a lot of focus on west versus east. But the storm can start west and then end up east as well. We were talking about this earlier.
Right.
There's a lot of weather models that are taking the storm and tucking it in along the coast of southern New Jersey and then ejecting it eastward out towards Block Island and up into, Cape Cod area. That as well is a very different situation as opposed to the earlier runs that, they pulled the storm inland near Ambrose Light and Sandy Hook. That's a whole different ballgame, because those two situations, whether it's tucking in near southern New Jersey or tucking in near Ambrose Light and Sandy Hook, that's a completely different evolution for the entire Northeast states. And so I think that, when we look at the models tonight, and again, models are guidance, so we want to try to figure out which is going to be the most likely of the two. But as we look at the guidance tonight, I think that's going to be a key thing, because where does the low pressure and the mid-level low pressure centers end up? And if it hooks into southern New Jersey first and then ejects out to the northeast, that's a whole different situation than what we were seeing earlier today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a point about how the low can initially be west and then jump east, or even vice versa, is something that's really going to have to be carefully monitored, and sometimes may even go beyond the general synoptics because of how the models handle convection and how, convection can yield so much, rapid upward vertical motion in the atmosphere that it leads to pressure falls, kind of like how you open a soda can and, that pressure gets released. So sometimes the models will try to, quote-unquote, jump jump the low towards that convection. But then, there will also be times when the synoptics take more prevalence too. So maybe the low will jump either westward towards the synoptics, where the vorticity is pivoting up the coast. But then maybe the next hour it'll, quote-unquote, jump to the east towards the convection. So when the models kind of shift the L around, even mesoscale models, they'll jump the L around often every hour. People think that's an error, but it's not really an error as much as it is the models trying to resolve the convection and where the verbatim lowest pressure is at that time. And sometimes those jumps can make a slight difference as far as the saturation and the exact location of the banding.
That's a great point. And I think a lot of times, and for everyone listening, we're talking about when you look at the weather models and you see the L on, just for instance, we'll say the NAM as an example, and you see that L on the actual image. And a lot of people say, oh, look, it's pulling the low pressure out to sea. That L is relative to its surroundings. So it is the lowest pressure, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's where the center of where the circulation of the storm is. It also doesn't mean it's wrong. It also doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yes.
And that it could very well be correct. It's our job to figure out, hey, is that correct? Because you can't just say it's jumping to convection. That doesn't mean anything. Jumping to convection is really something that actually can happen. Because if the convection is strong enough, that's where the center of low pressure will redevelop. And so I think
right.
when you look at the different models, the globals and the GFS, they don't have the resolution to figure that kind of stuff out. And then you look at the NAM, and it kind of can sometimes be overzealous. That's all part of the biggest picture. The bigger picture as a meteorologist is, you know, how do you weight which model which way? And that leads me to my next discussion point. I mean, it's not like questions. I don't want to be interrogating you, but I'll let you talk first. But our next discussion point is, in this situation, which way are you leaning? Like, which models are you tending to favor? Are you looking at the NAM guidance and the convective allowing models, or are you going more towards the globals?
It's always a tough question to know which situation is going to be most ideal for which models. Like, I mean, to me, in the early January coastal blizzard, it was pretty obvious that the convection allowing models are going to be the ones that were superior, because the convection was really such a vital part of the system, and even in parts of, you know, the southeast and the Gulf Stream and the Gulf, like, there was so much interplay with modes that would indicate convection would be a big part of the storm's development.
Right.
With the rapidly evolving Millard seas off the coast, it's not always that same way. I mean, there is a lot of convection involved near the center of the storm. I'm just not sure it's as clear cut that the convection allowing models are going to be superior in this aspect. However, I don't think it's a coincidence that the European and the EUCMET models have been playing quote unquote catch up and gradually trending west, because sometimes, you know, the global models, it's not necessarily even a resolution thing. It's an assumption that they make, because, you know, hydrostatic versus non-hydrostatic. You know, I'll try to make it simple and say that the one of them, it assumes that convection has to be, you know, limited, and the synoptics always overpower any convective process. And that's what the quote-unquote global models do, regardless of resolution. The European model is a 9-kilometer resolution, but it makes the assumption that the synoptics are always prevalent and that vertical motion due to convection is negligible. So that's why the Euro may kind of do the averaging of that convect to the east and the tucked-in surface to the west and average it out, maybe smooth it out too much and have a solution a little bit further east. Whereas in metal scale models, they don't limit the vertical motion from convection in their calculations. So they may have a better aspect of picking up, the low may jump, quote unquote, jump west, jump east, due to the convection. It's not just, you know, the mean isobars. It's also where the low is situated with respect to convection. So I lean towards the convection allowing guidance, but not 100%, like we did for the early January blizzard. Maybe like a 70-30 blend.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I think you explained it really well too, because, you know, there's certain situations where, you know, like the early January storm, when it was much more useful, and I felt the globals were really smoothing things out, and they were not really picking up on the actual processes that were going on very well. In this case, as you touched on, I think there's benefits to both. You know, I think there could be there could be some benefit to using a global model in contrast to a mesoscale model that I think in this situation, and we see this often, this is a whole other discussion that I don't want to go off into, but we see this often with Miller B storms specifically, and I don't know why it is, but the mesoscale models, and the NAM especially, just they tend to seem to overdo the convective allowing processes, and the banding ends up too amplified. We saw this in January 2015. We saw this in many other storms that have
February
originated.
February
2013. It's just, you have to be really careful. And I think for whatever reason, it's especially true with Miller B storms that are not originating from the Gulf. So I'm right on board with you in the fact that, you know, obviously we are not going to consider the GFS, which is a pile of garbage. But I think when we look at other models like the EUCMET and the Euro, I think they can be weighted more significantly here as opposed to some other storms where I would lean more heavily on the mesoscale models for sure. I think a nice blend that leans towards the mesoscale models is fine, But I think I'm in the same boat where I want to include the globals in this situation. Where I mean, I just and I hesitate to say this because I've had some opinions from people that have the recency bias sometimes, and they're like, oh well, because of the last storm, it. But when it happens time and time again over a period of time, I think it's worth noting. So when I look at a Miller B developing like this, and I hesitate to say last second, but I'll say a late developer. You know, this thing is actually really bombing out pretty close to our latitude. There's just a history of mesoscale models being a little bit too quick with these things, and so I hesitate to go fully in support of the mesoscale models. I think, and this kind of circles back before we start analyzing the NAM. I think the room is there for this thing to slide a little bit further east than the models earlier today indicated.
Right. I haven't actually looked at the NAM yet. I did see the, not that this model is very relevant, but the RPM actually went way east compared to its previous run, and is much, much snowier for even like Nassau County and westward.
Let's give some context for a second though, because how bad was it? Let's backtrack for 1 second. How bad was it really?
It's on the classic windshield wipers. Yesterday at this time, it was pretty much out to sea, and then it kind of shifted all the way west, so that New York City and eastern New Jersey had no snow a couple of runs ago, and now it's steadily shifted back east again. The classic windshield wiper. But yeah, going back to your point about the Miller Bees, there is with the mesoscale models. I'm just kind of speculating here that sometimes they suffer in the quickly blooming Miller Bees is because there can be a feedback with the convection and downstream latent heat release. With the point where I think in a situation where the phasing hasn't really occurred yet, the mesoscale models overdo the feedback with the convection and latent heat release to amplify the flow out ahead of it, maybe a bit too much, because the latent heat release, that's just generally leads to more warmth being expanded into the atmosphere and thus higher atmospheric heights. So I think that tends to happen a bit with the mesoscale models and quick blooming Miller Bees, which could certainly be a reason why some of them may tick a bit to the southeast tonight.
Yeah, I think so too. And not to make any calls. And again, what we need, Doug, we need a disclaimer for this show, because I don't want to get put on record for anything that I say here.
Oh yeah, you keep forgetting to do this.
I know. But so I guess what I'm saying is I agree with you. I think we have our forecast out and yada yada yada. But the room is there for things to slip further east, I think. For instance, the GFS at 12Z, I think it was horrible. I mean, I think that will end up being way too far west. It remains to be seen exactly how far things correct and if our idea on the correction is right. But I think the room is there for things to correct to the south and east. And I say the word correct because I think that the mesoscale models that were so close to the coast and so far northwest with everything are wrong. I think they're wrong. And that's why I use the word correct, because I think they will adjust. I don't think they're going to, go 150 miles to the east. I think there's going to be an adjustment.
Right.
I think the room is there for that adjustment.
Right, and that adjustment could be a big difference in the immediate New York City area. So even if it's subtle, that's a very important a difference regarding the verbatim snow impacts for New York City. So certainly something to watch.
That's the next thing. So let's talk about the impacts that we're expecting tomorrow. Obviously, this morning, early this morning, and then late tonight and into early Wednesday morning, we're going to get this first band of kind of this first surge of snow, which really is like a pool of moisture kind of feeding along this thermal gradient that's sitting here initially. And I think that's a really interesting feature, because the weather models, with this initial burst of snow, you get this initial like kind of area of precipitation that develops. Then it fades away because you get a little subsidence and sinking air. And then the coastal low develops and you get that first burst of snow. Have you checked that out? I think it's a pretty interesting dynamic that goes on with that.
The initial overrunning that starts
yeah.
7Z tonight. Yeah, I haven't taken a look too much at it compared to that initial phronogenic band. But I have noticed the models get a bit more impressive with it, and oftentimes in the short range models will trend a bit more quote unquote aggressive last minute with these little sneaky overrunning waves. And I'm actually looking at the Hearst sounding. Well, for West Long Island, because that's where I live and I'm biased now. But it actually looks pretty decent. You know, it's not the extreme lift that we're going to get later on in the storm, but there's a decent amount of moisture and instability and lift in the Dahuta Gulf Zone. So there could be a little nice burst of snow, of moderate snow, later tonight. I think this initial burst of snow may be more impactful for, you know, southern New Jersey, where the precipitation will be a little heavier, and initial rain, assuming the precipitation is heavy enough, could change over to snow and maybe accumulate, though not sure about accumulation to the roads with this first batch, but southern New Jersey, especially southwest New Jersey, could do pretty well in the snow department with that first batch before, as you said, the subsidence kicks in as the coastal lows lift becomes the predominant feature.
I agree. And you see that really fades away on the models as the coastal low forms. So it could be just an initial,
yes.
You know, just, I don't know, just kind of an initial burst of snow, and then models kind of have been adjusting in regards to it. And I think it'll be interesting to watch that evolve. Just something to keep in mind, because in the morning time, you know, a lot of people are kind of going to be waiting for that coastal low, and I think there might be a little bit of a show beforehand. So anyway, let's jump into the NAM. Doug, I'll go ahead and set the tone here for a second and say, and I'll let you kind of give your commentary right after.
I still haven't gotten
to
look at it yet. I'm just loading it now.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, pull it up. So my initial impression on the NAM, and again, we are going to analyze the NAM here. You know, some people will probably scoff at it, but you know, it is what it is. And I enjoy it. I think it's fun to look at the synoptics and what's evolving. And my initial impression of this model as I look at it is that there are some pretty significant changes. And to me, it's pretty apparent early on. But then if you go to the vertical velocities and you pull up the 12Z run, I'll compare the 0Z to the 12Z, and you pull it up valid 18Z Wednesday, and you compare the two, you can kind of see how the surface low pressure itself, the center of it, and we were talking about this before, the center of it isn't far off, but the upper level tilt is completely different. So the pressure field shows the difference as well. The 1,000 millibar contour, for example, is about 50 miles southeast of where it was on the 12Z run. And that tilt as a whole does not allow the banding to expand and the dynamics of the storm to expand as far north and west as the prior runs did. And you're also looking at a different orientation of the PVA, or positive vorticity advection. And as that occurs, I think the entire storm system will be shifted to the south and east. So I think if you're looking for snow in northern New Jersey, New York City, and eastern PA, this is a great start to this NAM run, because I think the entire system itself will be adjusted to the south and east of where the prior run was. But I'll let Doug give his opinion as well.
Oh, yeah. Based on the synoptics, I definitely agree. There's a little bit less phasing. I'm just comparing to the 18Z run on Tidbits. Just in general, the northern stream height contours aren't diving to the south as aggressively as they were on the 18Z. And also, the height contours are not nearly as buckled to the northwest in our area. And even if I have a millibar winds, they kind of shifted from more so like buckled and southerly to southwesterly, which indicates still a little bit of a positive tilt to the verbatim height contours in our area, though, that, you know, that may lead to the initial, well, just verbatim, that initial phronogenesis band, you know, earlier in the morning to be a little lighter in intensity, and thus, just if you're going on the, you know, tropical Tidbits precipitation types, it actually is, well, through 15Z, technically, rain in the southeastern half of New Jersey and New York City and Long Island, whereas the 18Z run was colder in New York City and Long Island. However, storm itself is further east compared to the 18Z run, so I think that would portend a shift to the east in subsequent frames to the point where it does cool off compared to the last run in the very battleground zones.
Yeah, so, and here's the thing. I mean, we were looking earlier today at a dry slot. You know, we had this, because of the tilt, and this is where you talked about the positive vortex direction, because of the tilt of the mid-levels, as the cyclone develops, you were getting a northward surge of dry air. And that was ripping into Long Island, parts of New York City, and up into Connecticut. What we are seeing on this model run, and this is a crazy model run. Holy crap.
I just loaded the future panels. I'm glad I said that the future panels would tick east. I would look really bad. But I was only after hour 15. I feel like you already had seen it when I was talking.
I'm out to hour 22, and when you look at the critical thickness and the vertical velocities, I mean, you now have a 992 millibar low. It's shifting eastward from Atlantic City or, I guess, Long Beach Island latitude, and it's going to the east. So now you have the cold conveyor belt. The cold conveyor belt is wrapping around into New Jersey and New York City. The entire tilt of the storm system is completely different. I'm hearing there's a couple people saying there's not much difference in the model run. I don't know what model run they're looking at, but this is the evolution of the storm, the tilt of the cyclone is completely different.
It's more progressive, and I think an underrated tool is a 500 millibar wind barbs. And off the coast, on the 18Z run, they were much more southeast to northwest. They were buckled. But now on the latest run, they've turned a little bit more just from south to north, which is a more progressive solution. It didn't amplify as much to the southwest, so you didn't get that same tucking in effect to the southwest. And you didn't get that same, what we call, for lack of better terminology, magnetic pull towards that initial polar vortex load, because there's going to be an interplay with the blocking on the upper level low in the Northwest Atlantic, kind of fighting with the quote unquote gravitational effect of the polar vortex load trying to capture and drag it northwest. But since a lot of times in these late blooming Miller B events, the NAM has been too aggressive with the phasing and the capturing and dragging everything to the southwest. And it's made last-minute corrections progressive into the east. And that same, I wasn't expecting this much of a shift. I was expecting a little bit of an east shift, but I wasn't expecting this dramatic of a shift aloft, but just the synoptics of the system even. And also really interesting is, one of my favorite features in snow is front-end frontogenesis bands, on the lead side of the storm as warmer convection aloft moves in. Just the amount of lift that creates and just the heavy, wet dump of snow you can get. Some of you might remember the February 2014 event where we were just ripping parachute-like snowflakes with 4 to 4 inch per hour snowfall rates on the front end of that storm. It's one of my favorite events. I'm not sure if this will quite be like that, but if you look at the 700 millibar frontogenesis on the NAM Val 15Z, it's incredible to see what's moving in from the ocean into New Jersey at that hour. And then the 50 millibars, which may actually be a little more of a accurate representation, further southeast, because the frontogenesis kind of tends to tilt northwest as you head northwest. The frontogenesis 850 millibars is also very impressive with that burst of snow. So you can really get a good frontogenic snow band that dynamically cools the column across the coast as well, which would certainly be a snowier outcome for New York City.
Well, I think that's putting it lightly. And this is, you know, when you look at this evolution, I encourage everyone, if you have the ability to kind of steer yourself away for a second from the model, you know, precipitation and the snow maps, and go look at the difference in the vertical velocities if you have access to Storm Vista. So you're going to click on northeast view and go to critical thickness and 700 millibar.
So much further southeast.
and the 700 millibar vertical velocity, you want to click that. And you want to look at the difference between where the development of the system was with the favorable lift on 18Z, and then look at the difference on 0Z. And the most important thing to pay attention to is the tilt of the developing cyclone, because it's completely different on this model run. Not to say it's correct. You know, we have to – obviously, we want to see additional data as we go along tonight and check the whole thing out. But the tilt of the cyclone is completely different and allows – the entire cyclone to mature in a different location. So instead of sending all the banding well to the northwest and a dry slot ripping into Long Island and parts of New York City, you allow for the cyclone to develop differently. It's tilted differently. And so the cold conveyor precipitation is located over New Jersey, parts of New York City, and Long Island. And it's a whole different tilt. And I'm sure, I haven't looked at these graphics yet, Doug, but I'm sure, you know those graphics that were floating around of the 500 millibar relative humidity that people were showing for the dry slot? I'm sure that is dramatically improved. I'm sure that's a whole – it's probably entirely different because the tilt of the developing cyclone is entirely different. So I'm sure that that probably has improved as well. I'd be interested to see that.
Well, I think for me, the biggest tonality is just, you know, the 700 millibar well in general, this tracks further to the south and east. Especially our 18 on the 0Z NAM versus our 24 on the 18Z NAM. First of all, there's I don't necessarily look at the height contour itself for the 700 millibar, quote unquote, low. I look at the rotation, the counterclockwise rotation of the wind barbs. On the 18Z on the 24 hours, we see the counterclockwise circulation, 700 millibars, was in Lancaster, PA. And then on the 0Z run, at the same time, that counterclockwise rotation shifted well southeast into southern New Jersey. So that's a big difference as far as preventing the mid-levels from drying and tainting across the coastal area and promoting better banding. So change at this short of a lead time.
Yeah, well, it's a very big deal, and I mean, let's be honest. The NAM always does this when it gives up. It doesn't give up until it's literally wrong, you know. And to give people an idea of the process, the NAM will generate this overzealous convection and positive vorticity advection 6 hours out. So until it literally cannot do it because it's not happening, the model will continue to show it if it's incorrect. So that's why you'll see the NAM continue to be wrong all the way up until hour six. And so,
right,
you know, we're seeing a little bit of that process here where it's correcting itself based on what's going on back over the southeast states and the Ohio Valley. And also important to note that these model runs do have the recon data in them as well. So looking just at it for a second at the synoptic evolution on the 3-kilometer NAM, which is coming out as we speak, I see extremely encouraging signs. If you are in eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York City, Long Island, the entire, again, very similar changes. The 1,000 millibar pressure, if you were to just look at the pressure contours just as an example, they are at least 75 miles southeast of where they were on the 18Z run, and that's maybe being generously low. The entire thing is further southeast already. And you can see it in the 700 millibar relative humidity and the upward vertical motion. That's not to say that this run might not change here as we go over the next couple of hours here as we move out. Right now it's only out to hour 15. But compared to the 18Z run, it is dramatically further southeast right out of the gate. So I think something's going on here with the models that is changing the way that things are evolving. We're early on in the data set. You know, I like to say we're early in the ballgame, but it looks like something has changed here tonight.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not, usually a good thing to play the model-to-model cycle game every suite of models leading up to the storm. But when we're this close to the event, and when they added the extra, radio observation to the storm, I think it is important to note the shifts that are occurring as a response of that, of these short-term changes and more data that's in the system. So although I hate the RPM as a model, the fact that it shifted well to the southeast to me was a sign the NAM was going to do the same thing because they both had that same injection of new data. Going along with the 500 millibar RH, it certainly looks good for pretty much the entire area for snow initially, and throughout all of New Jersey, throughout the whole run. It does get a little bit dry from eastern New York City at valid for 21Z, it looks like. So it's after that initial thump of phonogenic snow on Long Island, it was probably still go over to a dry slot and reduce the snow amount. So, maybe the reflectivity is, 22, 23, and 0Z on Long Island really probably aren't accumulating very much. Of course, maybe the RH recovers after that, but there's probably still a little bit of a dry nose east of New York City at that point, but all of New Jersey and New York City and westward, they look pretty saturated, even at 500 millibars at 21Z Wednesday, which is certainly a difference from what the previous NAM model runs were showing.
Yeah, and I think kind of what we touched on earlier, it's the tilt of the storm system is completely different. That being a major factor in this whole thing, to give people an idea of what we really are talking about, that the tilt of the storm is so critical as it develops, because, if the cyclone is maturing and not to get too detailed, but if the cyclone is maturing, and we talked about this right out of the gate with this show, but if you're curling the low pressure in and the cyclone is developing and hitting its kind of peak with the positive vorticity advection coming up the coast, and if that's happening up near Sandy Hook, New Jersey, New York City, Long Island, eastern New Jersey, they're not going to see a significant snowstorm. I mean, it's just not going to happen. That snow is going to be thrown back, no matter how compact the storm is, that snow is going to be thrown back into eastern Pennsylvania and up near Albany, Poughkeepsie. But if the cyclone is maturing further south, which is what we are starting to see tonight, we're seeing the low pressure tuck in near the Chesapeake Bay and then start to move off to the east. If that happens, it changes the complexion of the way things are evolving, and it allows the storm system to – you're still going to get banding really far northwest. I want to make it clear. I still think that there's going to be a tremendous band of snow way to the north and west over – on that frontal genesis axis, eastern Pennsylvania, northeast.
And they'll have better temperature columns for, maybe a better ratio snow.
Oh, 100%. I think that, let's kind of back up for a second and talk about that, because I think I want to make it clear. I think that's where the best banding is really going to be. It's going to be further to the northwest over eastern PA, northwest New Jersey, up into Poughkeepsie, maybe up into parts of, New York State, and that's where I think you're going to get kind of that, we joke around and call it a mega band. I think that's where that's going to be. But in the same token, I think there's now with the evolution of the storm shifting, not only are you going to bring that banding into northern New Jersey and New York at once and Long Island at some point, but you're also going to get much more intense support for heavy snow prior to that as well. And I think that's the thing. You're not going to get that dry slot and that tainting that we were seeing depicted earlier.
Right.
All right. So, any other analysis that you have here? I haven't seen the latest 3 kilometer NAM.
I haven't looked at the 3 kilometer yet, actually. So I don't really have any. I don't really have anything to add there. Have you looked at the 3 kilometer yet? I mean, I heard people are saying that it's also joined the 12 kilometer NAM in shifting east. So I do wonder if it's still kind of like, I guess, overplaying the latent heat release and the convection that's kind of surging into the area.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous model run, to be honest with you. It's
okay.
Yeah, it's just one of those. It's one of those. It's just ridiculous. I mean, the dry slot, as far as I can see,
okay.
And again, I haven't seen the 500 millibar relative humidity, so there might be dry levels that I'm not looking at. But in terms of the 700 millibar relative humidity, when you're looking at the actual storm system itself, it is well east and south of where the 18Z run was. It has pulled things
right
east by, I don't know, about 50 to 75 miles, I'd say. And again, the low pressure center ends up taking a fairly similar track, but the tilt of the storm is completely different. And
that really
precipitation
the
numbers are obviously the go ahead.
But I was going to say, some of the previous high resolution NAM models, they had that fire hose of convection, but so far to the west, the coastal areas like New York City especially would get an almost like the purely convective, like pseudo warm sector of the storm. So where you get these convective blobs and breaks in the precipitation,
right,
which is a little more spotty. So then you might get a quick burst of snow, but then after 10, 15 minutes, you get a little bit of a wall in the action and dryness and liming and melting. But on this run of the 3-kilometer NAM, it looks like the radar returns look more favorable for that convective snow bands to more so situate over the area to where you're not getting those breaks in the action and the dryness in the snow growth region in between the pulses of convection. You just get more of that that fire hose of convective banding situated over the area that would accumulate quickly. That's what it looks like to me on the high-resolution NAM model, maybe more like the RGEM and the high-resolution RGEM runs from earlier.
Yeah, I agree. I agree overall. I think, there's going to be a juxtaposition here where you're going to get folks that are getting both the fire hose and then the cold conveyor belt on the back end, and I think that's a kind of an area where people might see a lot of snow. Just from a dry slot perspective, to talk about it, you know, the actual drying out of the 1 kilometer precipitation rate, that doesn't really make it much further west than Iceland. So you get really intense stuff moving in, and then New York City and northern New Jersey, you get even into that really intense banding that sits over a large majority of the area. And then
I was not expecting that.
Yeah, it kind of sits, and it really sits for a while. I mean, obviously the precipitation amounts on this model are ridiculous, so it's hard to take them seriously. But
it's hard to take
out
their data. Maybe as a localized max. There could be, like 2 inches plus in a localized max, but not like spread out as it is.
Yeah. It's pretty tremendous shift, especially compared to the 12Z run. When you look back at that run, which was further northwest than anything in terms of NAM guidance, I think this one is dramatically different. So, Doug, can you get on 33andrain.com right now? Because I can't. Can you load it up? Okay.
Yeah,
well, you're gonna have the job of.
Oh, it goes to questions.
All right. So for whatever reason, it sounds like Pat and Jeff have disabled my access to the forum so that I don't post.
Oh.
I don't think they want me talking on there right now. Yeah, no. No, I'm just kidding. But you're gonna be in charge of picking out some questions that we can answer here. 22 minutes, or actually 12 minutes.
Cool.
So pick out a couple of questions that were asked, and you can shoot them to me, and we'll discuss them.
All right, let's see. Clicking on the questions thread. Okay, well, Paul Snow asked the question, what are your thoughts on the CCB swinging through the metro area tomorrow evening? I guess my initial thought about the CCB was that, there could be a little bit too much of a dry pulse, for lack of better terms, aloft with that, the mid-level centers getting close to the coast, and thus the snow growth would be contaminated by the time the CCB swings through. But, maybe if the NAM shift is correct, then it would be a better opportunity for a band to come through in the evening. What do you think, John?
You know, it's interesting. These bands have been the death of my forecast a couple times because you know, it's feast or famine with them. I think in this situation, though, given how things are kind of wrapping up and the way that the storm is rapidly strengthening near our latitude, I think the city, you know, it's tough. I favor areas like eastern Pennsylvania and northern New Jersey to get the band much more than I do New York and east. But I do think, it, you know, areas of northern New Jersey and New York City will see that they will reap the benefits of being just far enough away from the low pressure where you can get the cold conveyor belt to kind of redevelop. And honestly, I think you might get some of the best snow rates of the ratios of the event as that occurs, right? As that band swings through the last 1 to 3 hours of the storm, that band did not look like it was going to happen earlier today, the 12Z model runs. It looked like almost all guidance was not bringing that through. As you have adjusted the tilt of the developing cyclone, you now open up the possibility for that band to come through areas like eastern Pennsylvania and northern New Jersey and even New York City. So, yeah, to answer the question, Tim, I think that band is going to come through North Jersey, and I think it'll be on the back end of the storm, and I think there could be some pretty good snow ratios with it, especially with the newer guidance showing most of the column remaining moist up into the dendritic growth zone. So, to answer the question, I guess short answer, yes, but less likely from New York and east. So,
All right, what else do we have?
I
accidentally clicked on the other thread. So NJ Weather Guy asked, what is the most underrepresented threat impact of this storm? Like, do you think the winds or coastal flooding are going to be?
I'll go with broken heart.
Okay.
I think the threat of disappointment is the most underrated aspect of this storm. That's what I think.
Especially if you get your hopes up from tonight's run.
and it's not a classic storm. It's in terms of the evolution. This is not a cold conveyor belt coming and sitting over the region and us just figuring out where the band is going to be. It's dynamic. It's convective. There's a lot going on. Snow rates are going to jump up and down in between the bands. It's going to be in between the little convective blobs of snow that come through too. I think the risk of disappointment for someone, it's hard to say exactly where it's going to be, whether it's going to be on the northwest fringe or, you know, the 33 and rain has posters everywhere, so it might be on the northwest fringe in Pennsylvania, or it might be, you know, in New Jersey, Monmouth County, or, you know, something like that. I just think with this storm system, and Isotherm has hit on this for a little bit, you know, just the risk of disappointment with the storm system, and in terms of the track, I think we've settled in on a really, really nice track here now, but I do think the risk of disappointment with the evolution is probably the most underrated aspect of the storm. What do you think?
I also think sometimes it's more important to discuss the snowfall rates and the impacts rather than the actual snowfall and accumulation. A lot of times the problem with the snow maps is that they just discuss snowfall and they don't necessarily account for melting between bands or maybe localized areas where the snow growth is worse or, you know, let's say on New York City, for example, let's say if you claim the main precipitation type, your data is correct. Big assumption, but let's just say it is for New York City. And you might get a little bit of rain to start with that on 16Z Wednesday. It changes over to snow 17Z. But then, you know, on 18Z, if there's a little bit more of a convective pull from late heat release, you might even oscillate between rain and snow. But the snow maps are going to can all of these smoothing fees and do multiplication based on the ratio and not factoring out, the mixture or the dry side or rain that moves through at that same time. I'd love to see that once that big convective pool dynamic moves the column that it won't get pretty intense. It will get, I think, very intense once that convective band cools the column and we can really get some good snow rates out of that. But as you said also before about that, you know, the conveyor belt ramping in later, that's still going to have the better snow ratios to the west of New York City than it is in New York City itself. So that's still something to keep in mind when talking about the impacts of the storm and maybe more about the rate of intensity during the peak of the storm rather than maybe the actual verbatim snow that's on the ground at the end of the storm.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. I think that's a good underrated aspect of it. I think people are going to struggle a little bit. I guess the reason I said disappointment is I think people are going to struggle a little bit with the banding. You know, people are kind of used now to the intense bands, and I think it's going to be a little bit of up and down with the convective elements. So I think there could be some disappointment depending on individual location. But all right, let's get another question in. What do we got?
Just trying to look for questions that we didn't kind of already covered or are possible to answer. Let's see. So, Kanner, Weather MD, RP9, just discussed the convection and thundersnow possibilities from true instability versus maybe some, CSI that could, mess up some of the soundings. And what can we expect for this storm, well, in the metro in northern New Jersey? Yeah.
I love that question. Well, I'll let you answer it first, but I will say what we saw on the GFS earlier at 18Z was true instability. The fact that you had actual cape in the column,
right.
that was not CSI. That was true actual convective energy. But I'll let you kind of answer.
I think the Euro was showing that too.
Yeah, the Euro. If you guys are following along, if you go on look at the Euro maps and look at the cape, the Euro actually does have true instability in parts of New Jersey, and there's a lot. It's a very complex answer, but we're 3 minutes short. It's going to turn off on us in 3 minutes. I just want to give you that. So quick answer.
I guess I'll hold off on my snownado jokes. For the most part, it looks like the soundings are more so true instability, especially. I don't know where the cutoff's going to be from true instability versus CSI. I do think maybe further east on Long Island. I don't know if that's going to be National Suffolk border, maybe ISUP East or Queens East. You might get more a little bit of CSI from those convective cells that are coming in that could really on their own impact the verbatim temperature column. But for the most part, especially in western Long Island, maybe, but New York City westward, it looks like there's definitely some true instability as we get those convective blobs on the ocean to run into that cold air. So you have essentially thunderstorms into cold air, and you get true instability. And thundersnow, I think, is likely in some spots, maybe just inland in New York City. But it's hard to pinpoint the exact location of that now, but I definitely am optimistic about the idea of thundersnow in the area.
I agree.
Can you agree more?
In fact, I think the thundersnow element itself is being underplayed. And I think that it will be, if you're into that kind of thing, which I think most of us who are listening to a weather radio show at 9:30 PM on a Tuesday are into that kind of thing. There will be the opportunity for plenty of convective elements, including things like thundersnow. So, it's going to be really interesting. I think we've got the work cut out for us here tonight, Doug. And we're going to jump into the thread on the forum. For those of you listening elsewhere, 33rain.com, the place to be. We are talking about all different elements of the storm. We're going to follow along with the models tonight, including the RGEM, which is coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. And obviously, make sure you're following us as well at New York Metro Weather. We did put out our final snow map, so check that out when you have the time. Doug, it's been a pleasure. Maybe we'll have the chance to do this again. I think, these kind of things are awesome. It gets people involved and lots of questions and answers, and I think it's great. So thanks for coming on. For those of you who listened and took the time to interact with us, we appreciate it so much. We hope you're able to enjoy the storm, and we'll see you at New York Metro Weather and on 33inrain.com. For Doug Simone, and this is John Homnuck. Have a good night, guys. Thanks.